This week, Bitcoin climbed as high as 6,000, and the Dow picked up another 500, yet another all-time record high for U.S. equities. Welcome to Gold Seek Radio, everyone. Your host, Chris Waltzek, back with you. We have a supersized show, three big guest interviews as we approach our 12th year on air. Well, with Bitcoin mania in full gear and stocks all the rage yet again, my first featured guest plans to fulfill the dream of every investor to run their own decentralized hedge fund. The head of RegoBlock, CTO Gab Rego, makes his show debut. He outlines his plan to disrupt traditional management and performance fees through token incentives. Then, at Ground Zero in Puerto Rico, Harry Estent Jr. offers firsthand perspective on the plight of 3.4 million struggling in the wake of Hurricane Maria. He recounts a 15-hour ordeal where he waited out the storm in his condo. He thinks the current equities market is a massive bubble and expects gold to shine brightly as the next big market to rally. We make a great case for Bitcoin as one of the only free checking accounts with near zero fees, overdraft charges, or chargebacks, a decentralized monetary system, and a heads up for those thinking about buying a Bitmine rig, an Antmine S9 rig to a new outfit apparently in Japan is going to double the output with their new chipset, so might want to wait until early next year before making that purchase. Friend of the show, Todd, wrote in and let us know that Yobit, currency exchange, will issue Bitcoin Gold for your BTC during the upcoming fork. If you're one of us who actually knows what any of that means, you might want to send a few Bitcoin into Yobit. And I think there's only about 50 hours left before they're going to close the door on that operation. Don't forget our Q&A hotline, 641-715-3900. Please jot it down on a post-it pad or plug it right into your phone. You'll need our mailbox number, 514049. And Robert Ian wraps up the show with another must-hear report. GoldSeek.com radio begins now with a market weather recap. Partly cloudy skies appeared over the precious metals market this week. On U.S. dollar strength, gold gave back only 24, finishing at 1281. Silver fell only 33 cents, ending at 1708. The precious metals XAU shares were off 2.3 points, ending at 85. But black gold bucked the trend, adding 40 cents at 5184 and looking strong in the charts. The top story impacting the market, the safe haven suffered on dollar strength stemming from news that the U.S. Senate passed a budget plan for next year, clearing the road for key tax cuts. Lower taxes tends to translate into fatter wallets, stronger spending, better corporate profits, and share prices. Plus, existing home sales rose 0.7% last month, breaking a 3-month downtrend and besting the consensus on Wall Street. Precious metals, bottom line. Well, sure, the pause that refreshes can be discouraging, but I see little has changed, at least in the charts on a technical basis. The precious metals sector, CRB, West Texas, crude, all carving out solid head and shoulders patterns. Bullion and shares are still poised for an explosive move, and the year-long consolidation could just be the entry point. Charts look like a coiled viper just waiting for the equities bubble to pause. Moving on to the Wall Street, nary a cloud was yet again seen over the horizon of the New York Stock Exchange as investors cheered the positive economic implications of lower tax cuts and potential corporate profits. The Dow Jones was higher 457 points, ending at 23,328, and yet another all-time record high, the best in over 120 years on this news. The S&P 500 picked up 22, closing at 2575, and the NASDAQ added 23 at 6629, touching new highs. The Bitcoin ETF added only 25, rotten proxy for the underlying Bitcoin, ending at 702, and Komodo finished just down about a nickel at 175. Well, the financial sector, one of the biggest beneficiaries of the news on Capitol Hill, with JP Morgan Chase up 1.5%, Citigroup almost 1%, shares of General Electric also benefited. up 1%. Honeywell added over 1%. And PayPal Holdings picked up 5.5% on news that earnings and revenue beat expectations. Skechers up 41.5% on solid earnings late Thursday, topping analysts' estimates. So much for the retail apocalypse. Boeing 2.25%. China Southern Airlines agreed to buy 38 of their airlines. And shares of ticker TEAM added 25%. On news, the Australian cloud software company's results were better than expected. Bottom line on equities, well, our 7-indicator greed to fear index remains in the extremely greedy category. I continue to stick with the original target that gives a projection only 600 points higher now of Dow 24,000. Coming up after the break, more Gold Seek Radio. Well, it's just a pleasure to welcome the founder of Rego Block, Gabrielle Rego, founder and CTO of the company here, has a very interesting curriculum vitae, previously a treasurer for a large global macro hedge fund and head of investment of an asset management company. It's just a pleasure to welcome him here from Europe today. Hello, Gabrielle.
Hi, thank you very much.
May I call you Gab? Rego Block, what an interesting company. In a nutshell, it looks as though you're trying to take pools of digital tokens, which will allow access to a hedge fund club for virtually anyone without requiring huge sums of funds and jumping through all types of hoops.
Yeah, technically, it's kind of a trader's lifetime dream to have their own hedge fund. It's mostly... Most of the times it's too expensive to set up a fund in terms of costs or in terms of time to market, especially for the smaller traders, the younger, the emerging talents. This has always been not only my dream, but the dream of every trader to run their own fund. So basically, throughout my career and especially in the last few years, exploiting blockchain for this purpose was something that was really in my mind. So that was just an idea at the beginning. Then it was the first smart contract, then a set of smart contracts, and then the work was on extending it to a protocol and checking for security. And basically, what this software allows people to do, users, is to, without intermediaries, either going directly on blockchain or on a user interface, so a platform, to deploy almost instantly and for dollars instead of tens of thousands of dollars of cost. But it's not actually fund structure in the way that it doesn't have management fees or performance fees. They are all substituted by the token incentives mechanism. So it's a decentralized system where literally anyone can go to the platform, use the technology to create the fund without having to code, without having to know anything about blockchain trading on decentralized exchanges. The business model is Rego Block itself is the backend and also a platform. The backend can be plugged into any other front-end platforms, which can perform any of the most complex tasks or of the currently regulated activities like fiat to crypto, performance assessment. Rego Block is the underlying protocol, and we've also created a platform for people to be able to access. If I may say, not just us, but I think nobody can tell how blockchain technology will be utilized. There are some prevailing tools and architectures which are emerging at the moment.
It sounds to me like you'll have basically an Ethereum-based ERC-20 token on the Covan testnet, at least. Is it safe to say that you are creating a platform for people to launch their own hedge fund-like structures?
We're not managing any people's money. The platform doesn't manage the user's keys, so the user have total control and access of their own funds and of their own keys. And Rego Block is the technology that allows them to create their own structure and perform the trading activities that they want. There's no intervention on that side from the platform. The token has the function of creating an incentives mechanism. So there is this token on the platform. Now the platform is on the Kovan, so you're absolutely right. We will start soon, probably 1 month or 2 months from now. We will start an airdrop of tokens on Kovan, so probably even on Robsten. Users that go to the platform, it will recreate the same mechanism that will go live on mainnet. Basically, those ones will also be converted to mainnet tokens. The whole idea is to augment the network effect through users using the platform and guaranteeing a premium to the users who are actually FATesters to come to the platform, create their own funds, and receive some airdrops. So it's going to be free tokens.
I'd like for you to delve a bit into this idea of proof of performance. We've seen this concept work well for Komodo KMD. For every transaction, one at least is eligible to receive interest, and interest accrues immediately. You don't have to wait 3 months for a dividend or a coupon. You have a unique proof of performance concept here with RegoBlock, proprietary algorithm that rewards traders for the level of their performance.
Yeah, basically, the token has a limited level of inflation. So every quarter, there's some fixed amount of Nuke tokens, which are issued with a cap and are controlled by stakeholders. This inflation is redistributed to the users of the platform on the basis of their performance. So their indirect contribution to the network, to the Rego network. The details are not public yet. So there's a bit of secret sauce, but everything will be revealed in due time. So it's a matter of time for the people to know all in full details. The proof of performance is an algorithm that rewards traders based on their performance in a way is more linked or tied to medium to long-term performance. So it's a different paradigm. We're kind of disrupting the traditional concepts of management fees and performance fees.
I'd like to move on to this concept of assets migrating, if you will, to the blockchain. This is obviously key, and I don't think even many of the top analysts have fully anticipated correctly the magnitude of assets, you know, tied to the blockchain network. And this obviously is part of the RegoBlock concept. Can you give us an idea of just how external asset managers will use the RegoBlock registry to benefit as part of this decentralized hedge fund platform?
Yeah, so basically, our protocol is built in a modular way so that users can come to the platform or can deploy their own white branded version, like decentralized asset management company, or even a highly customized. So basically, if users come to the platform, they just use the platform. It's a decentralized platform, so it requires users being willing to manage their own keys, which might not always be the case. So there will be companies who are willing to provide a fiat to crypto gateway and store the keys. So they will do some kind of more centralized activity. In that case, these companies can come to the platform and either deploy their white-branded version, so it's just either plug-in, so they can just plug into the protocol, or they can deploy their own white-branded version. I mean, it's still white-branded even if they plug-in, or they can even ask for a highly customized, maybe they have, and in that case, that it can be customized, and basically, in that case, it's just some of the modules are used. The RegoBlock registry is core components which will help also have all funds under one single umbrella. It's kind of like the ENS, Ethereum Name Service, but instead of for domains, it's a registry which is specifically designed for these hedge funds and also external suppliers, even external protocols who maybe were launched before us and don't have possibility of creating any inflation. They can even plug in and use the registry to keep track of everything and benefit from also the proof of performance algorithm. So kind of a universal tool that can help everybody. Of course, somebody could design their own, but the registry now is free, has free access. it's free to use. So basically, users could just use ours.
Very good. I'd like to move on now to the upcoming ICO. For transparency's sake, we actually found RegoBlock on our own and reached out to you all several weeks ago. So there's no financial incentives here. We've not received any payment. And I think our listeners need to know that so they have a higher level of confidence in today's discussion. So keeping that in mind, with the ICO market, there have been issues where the events were compromised, let's say. You would expect that because, I mean, this is a whole new realm that's being created by programmers and by coders and people with that background. There are vulnerabilities there. Can you tell us today and our listeners just how RegoBlock and you and your team are looking out for prospective investors in the upcoming ICO and any other details you'd like to share on the event?
There will be some private sale before the ICO, and the ICO will have the scope of actually spreading the tokens around. So and also finance the whole network incentives mechanism. It's still not finalized which jurisdictions it will be included or excluded on that side. It's still not finalized the size, the total amount. What is for sure is that the only way for accessing the crowd sale will be from within the platform. So there will be no address, which I think this is important to share. And basically, there will be no publishing of an account anywhere on any social or anything. There will be a decentralized applications that users will access and be able to get their tokens. There will be this airdrop, so people will be able to get tokens for free. That's even better than having to take part of the crowd sale. But the crowd sale will be in the platform. So within the platform, there will be one section. Or maybe it will be a different domain, but it will still be, everything will be decentralized. So in order to try and minimize potential attack vectors.
Will there be distributions of your tokens, your ERC-20 tokens, in advance, let's say to institutions, to large investors, or will every investor have an equal opportunity to purchase them? And maybe if you have any token distribution statistics, that would be helpful too.
Yeah, we don't have them. There will be. If anyone is interested to know if there's some way to get in earlier, there will be no need for people to rush into that. They will just need to use the platform. That's it. It's even possible that everyone gets in at the same price. Having a pre-sale, private pre-sale, doesn't mean that it will be at the discount, necessarily at the discounted price.
That was my key concern with the pre-ICOs. We've seen enormous sums of tokens distributed or sold at vast discounts, which really amounts to little more than a pyramid. I'm sure I've left out key points that you'd like to share with the listeners before we go.
I think your questions were very direct, and they cover pretty much everything around token distribution, around the platform. Well, yeah, I mean, there's we call our vehicles like decentralized pools of tokens. We nickname them Drago, so we have the Dragos. And also on the website, you can find that we have the vaults. Basically, the vaults are something which is going to be very interesting next year when proof of stake goes in place, because those are pools that are dedicated for proof of stake mining. So basically, there will be controls and checks in that case in order to prevent faulty behavior. But will allow users to pool money together to do proof of stake mining. It's the idea of exploiting economies of scale from users who have small amounts of it and cannot solo mine. They will be able to use some still decentralized pools. We're not managing any pool of our own. Our whole concept is to provide a protocol and technology and let users operate. Then we have an exchange, but the concept is to plug in different exchanges, external exchanges. That exchange might or might be not operational on the mainnet, but for sure users will benefit the liquidity from other decentralized exchanges.
quick parting question here, and this may be not even relevant, but there has been some recent SEC changes here in the United States. And for investors in our country, really have to qualify, jump through some big hoops to participate in ICOs if and only if it's above a certain dollar level. And as I understand it, if one's investment amounts to $2,000 in cryptos or less, almost anyone in our country can currently participate. Have you all investigated or looked into the potential hurdles that investors here in North America might face?
Basically, we are delegating that to legals. It's not our decision. It's how the token is considered to be. It's an open question. It's a question mark. Yeah. What differentiates the Rigo token from many other tokens? I'm not saying that it's different and it's better. I'm just saying that it's different. Is that it will go to market with a platform. So it will not be some fundraising with a promise to deliver something. It will be a product delivered and the token around the platform. The token is an utility token and doesn't have any kind of backing. I mean, there's some scarcity which is intrinsic in the way the whole system is designed, but it's not linked to any dividends, repayments and stuff. So it's not being pitched as such. I see that the SEC is very conservative and strict, and of course, in the case we open up for US clients, like, users will need to be registered, provide their own data, new form of contribution where users have to provide their proof of identity. There will be probably some either legal opinion from the SEC or some partnership with some RegTech in the US. Now RegTechs are emerging. There's a couple. And so basically in that case, it would be compliance to SEC. In the case we're not compliant, we will have, of course, to prevent users.
I'd really like for you to talk about this idea that I think is catching a lot of momentum. Many people expect the blockchain phenomenon to not just disrupt financial markets, meaning our traditional stock markets, bond markets, currency markets, the Forex, but essentially the blockchain, because of the efficiencies in expenses and costs, but also in, as you referred to, the transparency involved and the decentralization inherent in the process. This is really the financial market of the future. Do you agree that you may be participating in the onus of an entirely new form of investing and trading?
For sure, it's new forms, new types of assets, because tokens are kind of different from equities and stocks. They can be considered as hybrid or in one case, one or another. The potential is enormous. First of all, it's a great opportunity for regulators and authorities and banks and central banks. Blockchain itself is transparent, so everything can be audited and checked. Platforms can be audited by code, not by operations. If you think about having traditional currencies on the blockchain, has the potential to just upgrade and update the whole infrastructure of financial services. So it will take a while for institutions to get confident in this now niche market, but we will get there. There's already institutions who are getting interested and are developing their own technologies. So I think, and also blockchains are now kind of talking to each other. There's already relays or bridges from one blockchain to the other. So if we look at 5 years from now, like, we envision a world where all blockchains talk to each other, and basically it's everything interconnected. And it's, if I may conclude on this one, tokens are much more powerful than the ICO itself. Tokens have the power to augment network effects on platforms. Platforms which have tokens, kind of loyal user base, which is interested in using the platform and in the long-term success of the platform or the protocol, be it one or another. In that case, the potential is incredible. We just have to work and wait and see.
So a lot of interest, I'm sure, as people consider whether or not they want to start their own Rigo block style asset-based crypto hedge fund. Well, Gabrielle Rigo, what an interesting idea you've put together. Would you like to share any contact information?
The website, www.rigoblock.com. And basically, there's everything. There's the corporate email. There's my personal contacts and our team. The team is still growing, but I mean, we try to be as transparent as possible so users can go to the website and even they can download one-click downloadable white paper and read everything about the concept, the technology, and the strategy.
Very good idea. I have the white paper here right on the desktop and suggest everyone download, thoroughly go through that due diligence there. We're going to look forward to having you hopefully return to give us updates on all the new developments at Rego Block.
Okay, thank you very much.
Well, it's a pleasure to welcome Peter Granditch of Peter Granditch and Company. Welcome back, Peter.
Always a pleasure to be with you, Chris.
You know, interesting market action. Just seems like a runaway U.S. equities rally on a weekly basis. We've seen some exceptional momentum. Not a lot of earnings to back it up. Are you still in the more bearish camp?
I actually today noted on my blog for just the second time this year, after taking a small loss earlier in the year, took a personal short position again in the stock market today. I don't think shorting is for everybody, but for me anyway, it's gotten to the point where it's absurd to see not even the slightest of consolidations or corrections, and the euphoria that we hear from people, and I don't mean just the talking heads now on the typical programs where they're always going to be bullish. I mean, Chris, you could toss those guys and gals off the Empire State Building and they would all say the same thing all the way down. So far, so good. So I don't get too caught up in what they say, but now I see in the public and in just about every meeting I have throughout each day with individual investors, business owners, small institutional type people, there's just a feeling that the market can't lose, that the market is the only place to be. I can't go any other place. And it's going to keep going and really have no reason. For a while, that can be a self-fulfilling prophecy. It's kind of like a crap table where suddenly it seemed like the seven's been taken out of the dice. But eventually the seven is called. And I just feel that when it does get called here, it's not going to be just a simple correction. I think it will begin the era of the worst period economically for America in its entire history. So don't ask me the day or the hour, but I think through God's grace, I'll live long enough to see it.
You talk about what sounds like could be the ultimate zenith on the market, and you say a dark time economically. I mean, we certainly saw that following 87, 2000, and 2008. You know, it really scared investors. Each episode, talk to folks today, and they're still worried about the market. Most of them, I mean, not all. I mean, there's some folks who are just permabulls or nice, solid, diversified portfolio, and they stuck to their guns.
Chris, what I see now is this difference than in 87 and 2000, even 2008. First of all, the country is far worse economically. It is far more indebted. It has a series of economic issues from entitlements to pensions to all infrastructure, all sorts of things that will cost literally trillions of dollars that this country is not in a position to spend or collect. At the same time, I already know that we're in worse off socially and politically. There is such a divergence now and such a dividedness in the country that didn't exist in those previous tops. And so if and when the top does come, there won't be a come together for Christ movement. I think the division will grow worse and the infighting will be at an extreme. So I don't know when it's going to occur, and I guess the safe way is it certainly shouldn't just happen in one night. There should be an event, so maybe you don't get out at the exact top. But I do think that once we start to see that the crack really has occurred, I think it will become an avalanche. And like I said, from my just discussion I had with my 25-year-old daughter the other day, is that I really don't think in whatever my lifespan is left at age going to be 62, I think it would be for the rest of my entire lifespan that things will be far more difficult than at any other time in America's history.
Moving on, Hugo Salinas Price, president of the Mexican Civic Association for Silver, he was recently interviewed on Saturday for his proposal to have a real sound silver pesos in circulation. It's not that far-fetched a concept. We still can find silver coins, dimes, quarters, half dollars in circulation, if you're lucky, in the U.S. Do you think that this might help shore up their country, and could we learn from that?
I think it would help them. I think where we're going to see, and I wouldn't say it's a surprise to some of us, I think it would be a surprise to Main Street, Wall Street, that certainly in the next one, that no longer than 3 to 5 years, China and or Russia will announce some sort of new international currency that's backed partially by metals and maybe even some other hard assets or oil or something of that nature. Because they're making all the preparations and doing the things to get ready for an alternative to the U.S. dollar. Yeah, I think it's good for Mexico. I think anywhere history has shown that all paper currencies eventually implode. The United States won't be anything different. It certainly is. It's hard for Americans to understand this. And when you try to sit down with them and explain to them and show them what we really have left as a nation after we pay our living weight cost of simply live and all, that we can't physically pay back the debt now that has occurred, let alone meet all the entitlements that people are expecting to collect in Medicare and Social Security. So there is it's not a question of if, there is a very big price to pay somewheres in the future. And as you just said earlier, unfortunately, the people who will pay for the most of it is our children and grandchildren. And let me just break up one other thing I wanted to say before, and it came to mind again. I have used three letters to kind of overall describe when I sit with people now to what I think they need to recognize what's happened in America. And it impacts everything, including the price of metals and everything. And that's SSR. And when I say that, some people think I'm talking about the old Chevy model. I'm not. What's happened in America is secularism, socialism, and relativism, they become the order of the day. More and more of this American society is moving to one or more of those. So those of us who still believe America should be or is in things not like that, whether it was Judeo-Christian ways or others, are having a very difficult time dealing with this change. We see it in the sports world now. We see it in the business world everywhere. And each day we're moving more towards that. And so it's hard for us, those of us who are grounded in more traditional, old-fashioned ways, to understand that this is unfolding in a way. But it's really not, because if we look to Europe, particularly a place like Great Britain, they're kind of where we were 20 or 30 years ago on that path. And we now know and we see what they and France and all are facing because of that. So I think history does repeat itself, and we as Americans, although Wall Street doesn't make money doing this, we could learn a lot by looking what happened in Europe over the last 20 or 30 years and recognize that it's unfolding now here in America.
So we could take our cue from our neighbors across the pond there, at least to the right. Moving on to technical action, at least in the commodities, we had the CRB show signs of life last week, West Texas, as well as the XAU poised for a breakout, and gold and silver bullion at least holding up. Do you think the U.S. dollar will continue to remain tame here, and could that be good news for gold and silver?
When I still speak about metals, I kind of go to the person and go, we're in a quiet, stealth bull market. Don't tell anybody. And if you look at things like copper and zinc, and as you said, even gold and silver, because think about where Main Street was on gold and silver a year or two ago. Gold should have been under 1,000 by now. Silver was predicted to go down to single digits. And yet, despite one record after another in financial assets, a supposed better environment politically or what have you in some people's eyes, and this administration is going to solve all the problems and tax reform and all these things are coming, gold and silver has more than held its own. And, you know, it has cryptocurrencies that are grabbing some of the attention. And then we have some base metals, which have really taken off. So I think we've already begun a cyclical bull market for the metals, and we're at the tail end of the ultimate bull market in financial assets, and maybe it takes 6 to 12 months longer than some of us thought, but the shift has already begun. And when that final crack comes in the financial end, asset end, it'll only take a small amount of that sifting out into where the metals are now to really get them to explode. Right now they're under accumulation and they're working their way into higher trading ranges. But when that financial asset bubble does burst and money does flow out of it, that's when the real fun will begin in the precious metals and some of the base metals.
So can you tie that in then with the blockchain revolution? We're seeing several new assets, digital assets, that are based on gold and silver, including 1 gram, upcoming ICO, as well as several others that are becoming a little less under the radar and more mainstream as the blockchain merges with asset classes. Real hard, solid assets might boost the underlying price for investors.
The only trouble I see for cryptocurrencies, and I'm a very novice on this, I'm not a person to really speak from an authoritative standpoint. I think anything that the government perceives that criminal or hiding of assets is the main focus of it, they will continue to attack and try to expose and either end or cripple or curtail it. I think as these things mature and there's the inevitable shakeout and they become more solidified to more business reasons, I think there's a good chance to survive and prosper. What I think is extremely bullish is in the metals, we can almost just put our two fingers together and leave a little space. That's the difference, that if we can just get that much more buying in them, physical, actual buying, all these paper manipulators and all will be destroyed, because we're just that close to where the tipping point of where purchasing and desiring to own would just overpower supply. So, you know, I've seen in recent days, and again, I don't look at the metals hour to hour, a day as I once did, but I noticed recently some talk, and they've used the word peak gold. I think peak gold has a more validity than peak oil did, because what killed peak oil was new technology that found ways to get oil out of the ground that wasn't existing 10 or 20 years before. We've not seen those technology gains, and I don't think it's possible to create new ways to get gold at somewhere where we're not seeing it in the ground, so to speak. So if we can just tip the demand side just a little bit more and make it stronger, I think the metals market will really, really take off. And I was quite surprised, and I won't mention his name, but I think people may know who I'm talking about if they're hard asset people, that even one of the most notorious, typical bearish commentators who for years, you know, argue in national media that there's no such thing as manipulation, even he is talking about in his group now that the metals could see in the next 3 to 5 years all-time highs, because the supply and demand scenario now is really getting into gear to where just a little more pickup in demand is really going to take the metals markets to much higher levels.
A lot of our guests, I think it's almost split, a dichotomy. On one side of the spectrum, we have the, you might call them supply and demanders, that you seem to fall into, at least now. And then on the others, there's the more the manipulation and paper money scheme crowd. And the two are usually diametrically opposed. What I find interesting here is what looks like a more perfect world scenario setting up, where you're correct, they're correct, and all the stars might soon be aligned in our favor for the first time in what seems like half a decade. So my hope is that the blockchain helps facilitate that, undermine some of the JP Morgan-like schemes. I did want to toss in, you know, last week's CPI numbers. We hopped to 2.2% up from a 1.9%, and that's a solid move over that 2% threshold. Yes, it's not the core CPI, which the Fed watches closely, you know, sans food and energy. But we did get a over 2% reading, and they're blaming it, of course, on Hurricanes Harvey as well as Irma, and maybe Jose and a few others. This indicates rising prices. That's typically good for the metals. Any thoughts?
Well, I've never been in the camp of this so-called very low inflation, because every time I look at my household bills and everything that we have to spend on, they seem to cost more than 1 or 2% a year going up. I don't know anything that my wife and I have looked at and said, wow, look at this. It's actually costing us less to do that or purchase that. So I've never been a big believer that the CPI numbers are real, but taking it on face value, there is some benefit. But I think the main driver to the future of the gold and silver market in particular is monetary and fear. And I think that people are really starting to understand that there isn't this oversupply and the days of total manipulation in the paper market on a daily basis is behind us, because the movement of physical gold has moved out of the West, and now we're also seeing exchanges taking a lot of that more and more paper trading away from the U.S., where it was, you know, highly manipulated. So I just think the gold and silver market is just going to work their way higher, and tell me that whatever caused the stock market to finally peak and just correct, and I don't mean crash or anything of that nature, I think just that little bit is going to seep into the metals, and that's when you're going to be talking about, you know, gold and silver having, you know, several 1, 2, 3% up days in a row, and, you know, and weeks where, you know, a couple weeks later we're 5 or 10% higher than we were the week or two earlier.
And as we wrap up today, if you were to build a portfolio right now, like $100,000 in play money as a model portfolio for our listeners at various levels in life, any ideas on a solid core position?
I'll just tell you this. I think the older you are, the less risk you should be exposed to financial assets. They've had a tremendous run for a couple of decades. There's nothing in history to suggest that it just goes on forever. Now, if you were 25 or 30, you could take a risk with that, because if we are right and it doesn't go on forever, you have an opportunity to make up for it over time. So I think that your age is more important than even what your wealth may be. I also think that it's when you get to the point of the biggest argument I know now that I heard as a financial advisor is, hey, you guys always tell us when to buy, but you never tell us when to sell. I always felt that if you couldn't first buy something today, even with found money, then maybe you don't want to own it, or at least own less of it. And it's very hard for me to find any real value in general equities. One of the few places that I still think you can find value is things related to metals. But when you get outside of that, whether it's real estate or oil, things are not really, really cheap. And that's why I say cash and some physical metals is, I think, the most safest route to go, and at least for the foreseeable future.
Peter Granich, please tell our listeners today a bit more about the information they'll find at your must bookmark website, Granich & Company.
Sure. It's Peter Granich, one word, Grandich, petergranich.com. There's a blog called Pete Speaks where they can just put in their email address and get whatever we post anything emailed to them. And hopefully there's an interest. We don't talk about the metals every day like we used to, but we still, you know, make mention of it and talk about general economic as well as political and social events that can impact people's finances.
Peter Granich, thank you.
Thank you, Chris.
With stocks hitting new highs, the next sector to fly could be the precious metals. GoldSeek's top industry analyst just uncovered another solid gold opportunity, Silvercorp Metals. Silvercorp's key property is located in China, the largest gold producer in the world. Silvercorp's net income is soaring, up 589%. Production eclipsed guidance by 27.5%. totaling 6.5 million ounces. Mining operations are literally printing silver at only $3.82 per ounce. AISC net byproducts credits for the fiscal year 2017. Sales increased 51% year over year, and cash flow from operations more than doubled to $80 million. Silvercorp continues to set the industry standard with reduced costs, equity appreciation, a solid dividend, and improved free cash flow. Silvercorp is uniquely positioned to capitalize on rising silver, lead, and zinc prices. To learn more about the exceptional opportunity in Silvercorp Inc., direct your web browser to silvercorpmetals.com, ticker symbol SVM in the U.S. and Canada. Remember to treat your portfolio with a core position in Silvercorp. Silvercorp Metals.
Goldseek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.
It's a pleasure to welcome Harry Stent Jr., head of an economic research and forecasting company. Welcome back.
Nice to be back, Chris.
I wanted to jump right into this situation in Puerto Rico. You're having trouble with electricity and many other issues. Can you illustrate for our listeners the severity of this total wipeout of Puerto Rico?
For the first, 10 days, there was a ban on alcohol. There was pretty much nobody had electricity. Almost no restaurants or stores open. You have to stand in line 6-7 hours to get gasoline for your car or for your generator. Now the gas lines aren't so bad, but they're just not that much open. Got $1,200 worth of cash when I was in the States, and now I'm going back on Monday late afternoon. Because I can't even write here. I mean, no internet, without electricity. So the only thing that works is this thing right now is my cell phone.
We went through something similar, but just for 4 days and 3 nights. And the only thing that saved us, this outdated 8-year-old 2,000-watt generator that I had to rebuild just to have some electricity. I guess it would be at a premium, wouldn't it? You wouldn't be able to find much gasoline to run a generator.
That was the problem, people having to stand in line. I think the gas situation's a little better now, but then there's a guy in our building that's with Gulf, and he says they're about out. So I don't really know what's happening. All I know is my wife is in New York. I'm going to head up there. We got a little place in New York. We have two places here, too. We have a condo in San Juan area, and then we have a house on an island called Culebra. I haven't even been able to get over and see that, but, I mean, that's built to withstand a hurricane. I think we got water on the floor. That was all. No window breakage or anything like that. So, but I can't even get over there to check it out.
Harry, do you have an automobile?
Yeah, I've got two.
Okay, good. One thing that really helped us get through the 4 days without power, they have these tiny cigarette lighter inverters. I don't know if you're familiar with that, but even one of the smaller wattage ones that plugs right into your car, that's how I was able to charge up our laptops. So I'd go run the engine, plug in the tiny inverter, it's only $20, $30 on Amazon, charge up our modem so that I would have internet, and then charge up the two laptops as well. People have no clue. Everything shuts down. There's nowhere to go. No one to help.
We put on a conference in Nashville, Tennessee, so I had to be up in the States. But she got out on the first plane out that first Monday after the hurricane. I didn't get out until the Saturday after. I had some stuff I had to handle here. But it took that long to get out on flights. I mean, there's just not anything available. And then you go to the airport, and the lines are super long, and there's no air conditioning, and everybody's sweating to death. I mean, it's crazy. I should have listened to my wife and not even come back. Now I'm trapped here until Monday late afternoon.
Have you had a chance to keep up with topicality, or is that probably not something that you've had access to?
See the market now and then on my cell phone. The stock market, to me, looks like it's right up against resistance around 23,200 trend line coming through there. So if it can break above that, it would be bullish, but I wouldn't be surprised to see the market set back. The question is it topping? I think it's in a topping process, probably between October and January. It could be topping here, but the problem with these darn bubbles, they just go until they blow.
So, I mean, this market, I mean, it doesn't matter what bad news about Kim Jong-un or the economy or anything else, it just goes up because investors have nowhere to go except for stocks, given that the bond interest rates are so low, held down by central banks around the world. So, this thing's just going to keep going until something goes wrong. But I think the market's getting in dangerous territory here. I certainly wouldn't be chasing it as an investor.
The exits are more appealing than the entrance on this market. But at the same time, we remember many of us 1999 and 2000. Could that just lead to the next run? So at this point, as long as the herd has control of the market, it seems to be a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of this rally has been stock buyback. I mean, again, with interest rates so low, companies are incentivized to buy back their own stock. But that doesn't mean they're growing. It just makes it look like they're growing because their earnings per share is going up, but their earnings may not be going up very much. So to me, this whole rally since 2009, we've been hiring back the workers we laid off.
You know, stocks have been playing catch up, and with a lot of mergers and acquisitions and buybacks and a lot of artificial stuff, not real solid growth. So, you know, to me, when this thing goes, it's going to go big. I mean, that's what bubbles do. When they finally do blow, what I found, I just put a chart in my most recent newsletter that shows that for all the major bubble peaks in the last century, the average first drop was 41% over 2.6 months. So that's what happens on the other side of this. This thing just keeps going up. Everybody thinks, okay, you know, the Fed won't let it go down. The market's going to keep going up. And then when it finally blows, people are going to get hit very hard right off the bat.
You know, in 2006 through 2008, as we had the nice gradual topping process, my canine could have picked the top there, you know, on a typical 1-2-3 reversal. But there are the 1987s that you referred to that catch people off guard. Could even say that the NASDAQ circa 2000, there wasn't a lot of warning. They didn't exactly ring the bells. Hey, guys, here's the top. Time to start selling.
That is typically happened. Now, not always, but most of the time, that's what happens. When it goes, you saw that in China in late 2015, a second bubble peaked there in their stock market, and then the market was down like 43% in 3 months, that sort of thing. The tech crash, that was 40% in 2.5 months. The 1929 crash, the first whack, was 40-some percent in 2.5 months. So that's what you should expect, and people aren't going to get that until it happens. Then they go, oh my gosh, I wish I hadn't chased that, you know, last 5 or 10%.
Exactly. I mean, those are the most costly ticks, the top and the bottom. All right, moving on to the CPI numbers, shot up considerably higher. Of course, they're blaming that due to increases at the gas pump plus hurricane-related price jumps. But we see higher prices, and that's no shock to most of us.
Well, you know, the other thing about inflation, I mean, we're in a deflationary environment in general. That's why central banks are having to print so much money. They're really combating deflationary forces, which will take you into a depression-like economy if they don't do that. But inflation does tend to be a late-stage thing. It will often rise into the early stages of a downturn. So it's not a surprise to me that we might get some late-stage inflation here. And that's something that should benefit gold for a while. Gold went up in the last crash. Gold went up in the early stages of the crash and then succumbed to the sell-off in the second half of 2008. So we're expecting gold to bounce up towards like 1400, give or take. But then I do expect gold to go down again when, in general, deflation pulls everything down except for high quality bonds.
Gold snapped back really sharply in 2008. And then it put in inverted head and shoulders and just never looked back to 1900. So we can't really have a conversation today without Bitcoin and related cryptos and altcoins.
Yeah, I met a guy down here, Michael Turpin. He's a real Bitcoin expert. He just spoke at our conference in Nashville. He's been involved in Bitcoin since the beginning. He was saying it used to be a tenth of a cent. You know, now it's got up to $6,000 just recently, and now I'm probably closer to five now. I haven't watched it today, but I mean, that's a real bubble, and it looks like to me it's in a fifth wave, so the question is this just the beginning of a longer run up? But I certainly, Bitcoin's looking a little dangerous to me right now, looking like it could take a correction. And then, you know what? People keep buying it, but there's a lot of interest in this.
Yeah, my thesis there is a little more out on the fringe. What's going on is you have a market that has, of course, limited supply, as we know, which is a little unusual because in our stock markets, with all the nefarious naked short selling and things of that nature, I mean, who knows what's the real supply? Well, there really are constraints on Bitcoin, and it's particularly challenging to short. The institutions have tried to come up with some ways to short Bitcoin via the ETF because they can't contain it through futures. And yes, they're trying there as well. And I'm still mining today, but I mine Monero now through GPUs and CPUs. But I was back there when it was around 50 cents. I was a little later than your friend. You know, I thought, well, this thing ran to $32. That's the peak. They have a caveat emptor and caveat venditor mindset there. You know, be nervous about buying and selling.
If it went back down to $3,000, I think you could be interested. But I don't want to buy it when it's zooming up because you know, you are going to see sharp corrections, and we have seen sharp corrections, but we've also seen very, very strong surges. I know Michael Turpin doesn't think this thing's anywhere near over. I mean, he thinks it's a long-term trend, which I do too. I think that it's like the internet too, the internet of like transactions and value. and money where the internet is failing. I mean, they have to replace my credit card at least every 3 months. It's a winning. This is about a lower cost, faster, and most importantly, more secure transaction system. And it is in its infancy. Many, many years for enough dominant players. Yeah, I think when some really big companies get to scale, then you'll have more stability in the price. You can't function like a currency with normal currencies when it's this volatile.
Let me just illustrate a couple of key things here that it's easy for even those of us who are enthusiasts and aficionados to forget. In the final analysis, Bitcoin is not really just a currency. I mean, it's a bank account. So let me give you an example. You're in, I don't know, Mumbai. You don't have access to any bank account, but you did come across a broken down iPhone or Android. You set up a free Bitcoin account and you've got 1/100th of a Bitcoin. And now you can go buy your family some food by just swiping it literally against another iPhone scanner. You're going to see billions of people who never had or would have a credit card or a bank account. We're on the cusp of a blockchain revolution, which brings transparency into everyday transactions. And we're seeing the merging now of tangible assets such as deeds, real estate, cars, autos, insurance contracts, hospital records, as well as gold and silver assets and collectibles. And that, you see, might undermine the paper money machinations we've been talking about. It circumvents the petrodollar because it facilitates alternatives to purchasing oil.
This is very early stage. I think this is something that's going to run and grow for decades, like the internet did. You know, we're just going to have to see where it goes. But I do, and I agree with Michael Turpin, that this is a big deal. This is a big trend. It is like the internet too, but it's more around transactions and things that you can value rather than just information and messaging.
You might think of it as the Gutenberg press, the guilds to the Gutenberg press changed everything. Well, people have likened the internet, you know, to the new Gutenberg press. This, in many ways, I believe, and we think, is the next leap, the next evolution of fiat. But it also is a huge productivity booster. Think of all the waste in paperwork and lost transactions and endless throughout government. I mean, the bureaucracy. This is the bureaucracy destroyer. That's what you have in the blockchain. Okay, we're talking about eliminating millions of jobs, but creating millions of jobs in this remarkable new industry. There's a lot of opportunity here, and that's why I hope the powers that be will get off our backs. But, you know, they always fight the transition to new power structures. So, are there any parting thoughts for our listeners and investors today?
Suggest strongly that there's going to be a major crash in stocks in the next 2.5 years between late 2017 and early 2020. That's the danger zone. I don't know what grain of sand is going to cause the avalanche, but there always is one. And when it does, as I said earlier, this is not going to be a 20% or 40% or 50% correction. It's going to be 80% or more. So this is not something to listen to your stockbroker and say, oh, we're just going to ride this out. And this is not the time to be invested in stocks for the long run. This is the greatest bubble we've seen in a long time, and it will end badly when it does.
An unbelievable situation down there. So you're a survivor. Keep holding on.
Well, I mean, I tell you, Chris, more than that, I had to hold my windows from blowing out. If we had not been here, our windows would have blown out in our condo, as about 60% of our building did on our side.
Yeah,
I'm talking for 12 to 15 hours, and I could not walk hardly for 5 days. My calves were so sore from that much pressure. Together. And again, the condos on both sides of the condos all around us blew out.
Harry Esnett Jr., thanks, and hang in there.
Okay.
With stocks hitting new highs, the next sector to fly could be the precious metals. GoldSeek's top industry analyst just uncovered another solid gold opportunity, Silvercorp Metals. Silvercorp's key property is located in China, the largest gold producer in the world. Silvercorp's net income is soaring, up 589%. Production eclipsed guidance by 27.5%. Totaling 6.5 million ounces. Mining operations are literally printing silver at only $3.82 per ounce. AISC net byproducts credits for the fiscal year 2017. Sales increased 51% year over year, and cash flow from operations more than doubled to $80 million. Silvercorp continues to set the industry standard with reduced costs, equity appreciation, a solid dividend, and improved free cash flow. Silvercorp is uniquely positioned to capitalize on rising silver, lead, and zinc prices. To learn more about the exceptional opportunity in Silvercorp Inc., direct your web browser to silvercorpmetals.com, ticker symbol SVM in the U.S. and Canada. Remember to treat your portfolio with a core position in Silvercorp Metals.
Gold Seek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.
This is Robert Ian with GoldSeek.com Radio. Chaos abounds. Information overload is on steroids. Confusion is everywhere. Over the past half dozen years, I have commented that when some kind of financial crisis, correction, or reset is next upon us, that our attention span will become so fractured, with so many exhausting and divisive issues, that it will become virtually impossible for most people, most analysts, and quite frankly, most everyone to identify the real cause of what will quickly become the next level of financial chaos and a declining standard of living. The cause will mistakenly be attributed or linked to a wide range of problematic and upsetting issues in their own right. Issues that have many layers, agendas, and learning curves. Let me list just a few of the dozens of issues that are currently battling for a place in your mind. Kneeling at NFL games. The specter of Russian collusion in the 2016 presidential election. Predators and cover-ups in Hollywood and elsewhere. Official contradictions and resulting implications surrounding the Las Vegas massacre. Organic protests and violence versus paid protests and violence. The debate over cryptocurrencies versus fiat currencies versus hard assets. The financial crash and burn of Obamacare, as premiums are set to rise by as much as 300% for some individuals, and many others. Despite what you've heard by supposed mainstream media experts, the banking crisis of 2008 never ended. The real estate crisis never ended. The employment crisis never ended. The healthcare crisis has only accelerated. These crises have been redefined, repackaged, and politicized, but they haven't ended. And the implications of the next market dislocations resulting from one or more of these crises are massive. The latest IMF report indicating that 9 out of 30 GSIBs, global systemically important banks, are financially vulnerable, and that problems in just one of them can create systemic risk for all of them, clearly suggests that the next financial crisis can be both systemic and global in nature, and can occur, potentially, very quickly. The complexity and size of these looming financial problems remains their protection. When the shoe drops, don't be fooled into phony solutions like constitutional conventions that will only strip away in chunks hard-won liberties that many have forgotten we already possess. Don't reverse the law of cause and effect and blame upsetting and divisive issues for what are at root financial policies that will attempt to capture and control your future effort, energy, and production. Chaos, overload, and confusion is dead ahead. Batten down your family's hatches, because we're in for a rough ride. And until next time, this is Robert Ian with ConquerChange.com, reminding you to follow us on Twitter at ConquerChange. Thanks, Chris.
Okay, Robert, thanks for another excellent installment. Well, that wraps up this week's GoldSeek.com radio episode. For two new big guests, be sure to check out next week's show. Until we talk to you again, have a great week.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.